Every word is a song. We are speaking so much, and sometimes we sing, and we all know that if there's someone who can sing nicely, like the other night when Krishna Das from the Gurukul sang the Damodar Astakam, I thought it was very nice, extremely nice. So we all know that nice singing, oh, it's very wonderful, and everyone likes that. But in Goloka, whenever they talk, whenever they say, hello, how are you, what's the time, what are you doing today, just common, ordinary, everyday chit-chat, every word, ordinary word, is like our beautiful singing. Yes, can you just imagine someone coming up to you and singing extremely nicely, how are you? And what service are you doing today? But in such a way, it's just, you know, just entrancing, just captivating. So every word, every ordinary word there is like a song. So Jiva Goswami raises the question that if that is the case, then what is it like when they sing? We cannot imagine that. And every step is a dance. Just like when you were running over here, some of you, through the rain. And it's just a hassle having to push your body and move. But, or just, you know, when you're walking here and there. So when they're walking here and there, it's like dancing. And like, you know, our dancing means someone who really knows how to dance here. Now, we may dance in kirtan, it may not be that, you know, particularly spectacular. But some people can dance in such a way that it's very striking. So in Goloka, every ordinary step they take is like that wonderful dancing as we know it. So, Jiva Goswami then raises the question that what is it like when they dance that we cannot imagine? That is beyond us. We have no experience of it. Jiva Goswami says, therefore, because we have no experience of it, therefore we cannot imagine it. Even within our minds, we cannot picture how the nectar tastes, how the singing sounds, how that dancing looks. We cannot imagine it. So Jiva Goswami says, therefore, generally, we do not desire it. Just consider, how can you desire something if you have no capacity to begin to imagine it even? You can't. You can't desire it. Just to give you, this may be a rather silly example, but well, sometimes in a dream, or sometimes during the day, you may see gold, you may see a mountain. So Prabhupada says, at night, when your mind is in deep tamagun, then you may dream of a golden mountain. But you've never seen such thing. Perhaps that's not a very good example. I can tell you, what I was actually going to say was, one time my father told me, Hare Krishna, he said that he had heard of an animal called a piggin. It was a pig with wings, and it flew. In other words, it was a mythical creature, probably created by some intoxicated person. Or prior to that, I had never desired to see a piggin. When he mentioned it, I thought, wow, I was just an innocent young fella. I was thinking, gosh, what would it be like to see it? But prior to him informing me of it, I'd never desired it. Why? Because I'd never heard of such a thing. I'd never imagined such a thing. Therefore, I'd never desired to see such a thing. So, Goloka is in a sense like that. It's beyond us. So what is our capacity to desire it? Of course, if we hear about it from Shastra, then that is like opening a window to the spiritual world. Then we may get the capacity to desire it. But until then, You know, people at most, they desire to go to the tropics on holiday or something like that. Or to Mauritius. In South Africa, people hanker to go to Mauritius because it's like that tropical island. But little do they know that the people in Mauritius are hankering to go to South Africa because it's more materially advanced. So, you know, in material life, it's like that. But we get these windows to the spiritual world from our acharyas, from the scriptures. So then the desire can arise and some type of comprehension arises. Jiva Goswami gives some nice explanations or ideas. He says, he notes how in the second of the two verses which make up text 56, in the third line it says, Bhaje Sweta Dweepam Tamahamiha Golokam Itiyam. He's glorifying Goloka, but actually he's glorifying the whole thing, including Sweta Dweep. Yeah. The outer part, which is not exactly the part where Krishna has his intimate pastimes as Krishna, that we read about in, I think it was text 5 or so. But he's saying, Bhaje Sweta Dweepam. Jiva Goswami draws our attention to the fact that for the last about 27 verses or so, every single verse, Lord Brahma has said, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship in that mood of like absolute surrender, in devotional service I worship. Not just I worship in a ritualistic sense, but Bhaje or Bhajami, I worship. It indicates absolute surrender in devotional service. So he's been saying that about Govinda. Now he uses the same term in regard to Sweta Dweep. In other words, Sweta Dweep is as worshipable and worthy of surrendering to and worthy of serving as Govinda himself. So in a sense, there's no difference. This, I thought, was a very interesting point. He makes the point that in the spiritual world, there is a sun and a moon. There is day and night. But the moon in Goloka, every night is a full moon. In Goloka Vrindavan, every night is a full moon. There is time. He says that there is time, but the verse says that there's no time in a sense. No past, present, future. Time doesn't pass away even for the space of half a moment. But there is time in the sense that the sun rises in the morning, it sets in the evening, then the full moon comes every night. That is happening. So how is it then that he can say, Lord Brahma can say, that there is no time? The thing is that time does not, as Lord Brahma says, pass away. In other words, there is not this phenomenon that there is in material life of things gradually passing away, gradually moving towards death. That does not happen in Goloka. In the material world, time ultimately means that thing which destroys and that thing which is moving everything towards destruction. But the time in the spiritual world does not do that. Therefore, Lord Brahma says, it is not subject to the quality of passing away. Not even for half a moment. What is the function of that time? Simply to provide a background for the pastimes of Krishna. That's all. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they become so enthralled in their pastimes, they forget about time. And sometimes the time becomes longer. And sometimes it becomes shorter. Yes. Just like when Krishna was here, he had the first rasa dance on the full moon night of the Sharad season we just had several days ago. And the gopis felt, they were so absorbed and so ecstatic that time just went, that whole night went in a flash, and they wondered what happened to the night. The sun just set a few minutes ago, it seems, and now it's rising again. But actually, the full night had passed, but they were so absorbed that time, it seemed like that. But of course, we understand from Shastra that Krishna, not only was the night not shorter than a normal night, it wasn't just a few moments as they thought it appeared to be, but actually Krishna extended it to the time of a night of Lord Brahma, 4,320,000,000 years, and it appeared to go in a flash. So just see, time is simply a background for the pastimes. And if it helps the pastimes to extend, it'll be extended by Yoga Maya. If it helps the pastimes to be shortened, it'll be shortened. Just depends on the pastimes. It's simply there to serve and enhance the pastimes, that's all. Just like when Krishna goes out herding the cows, it's only for a few hours during the day. But to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as Lord Chaitanya says, what is it he says? Yugaitam nimeshena chakshusha pravishaitam. That in Govinda virahena, in separation from Govinda, then yugaitam nimeshena. A nimesh, which means a fraction of a second, seems like a yuga, literally. Prabhupada translates as 12 years or more. The word is yuga, actually. So, a short period of time, a second, or even nimesh, some part of a second, seems like a long time. But it's just in terms of the pastimes. That's all. To enhance the love that is being exchanged. He says that Bhumis Chintamani Gana Mai means that the land there also grants all desires. So we talked about that. As we said, this is summing up mainly things which we've already read. At least some of it is like that. So we already talked about how all the ground is Chintamani, not just the odd rock here and there, but all the ground is Chintamani. Wish fulfilling. So Jiva Goswami says that if this is so, then how much more must the Kostuba jewel and other important jewels in Goloka fulfill all desires? They fulfill desires even more than the Chintamani, which the ground is made of. The inhabitants of Goloka are not aware, really, of the passage of time. They're just aware that they love Krishna. Then a very interesting point comes up. It's brought up in the last paragraph of the purport. Let us turn over to page 105. There is a hidden meaning of the proposition, or in the proposition, perhaps, even the supreme, that is also nevertheless the object of enjoyment. So where did this come from? It's a translation. It's like an interpretation of the last line in the first verse of the two which make up text 56. Paramapi tad asvadyam api. So param api, param means supreme, api can mean definitely. It's a word of emphasis. So Krishna, he is definitely the supreme, the only absolute truth. Then tad asvadyam means the object of enjoyment. So param api, tad asvadyam api, indicates the supreme who has become the object of enjoyment of the Supreme. Who is this? This is Lord Chaitanya. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is giving this insight here, that even here in Brahma Samhita, such an ancient scripture from the very beginnings of time as we know it, there's reference to Lord Chaitanya. The Supreme, who is the object of enjoyment. Yes, this is Lord Chaitanya. The glory of Radha's love for Krishna, the tasty quality of Krishna that Radha realizes, and the bliss which Radha experiences, they become available for enjoyment by Krishna when he attains his personality of Sri Gaura Sundar. So even here, Brahma Samhita is making reference to that. These are the three special desires that Krishna had, which stimulated him to appear as Lord Chaitanya in order to experience what it's like to be Radharani. How amazing! He wanted to understand, what is Radharani's love like? How great is it? He wanted to understand, what is it in me that she sees which makes her love me like that, in that unique way? And what ecstasy does she experience when she loves me like that? So her sentiment, what it is in him that she sees, which arouses the sentiment, and the ecstasy that she experiences through that. These three things Krishna decided he wanted to experience for himself, so he appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And the special thing, as we mentioned, the same point, basically the same point was made in the purport of text 5, that therefore Sweta Dweep is very important. We shouldn't underestimate Sweta Dweep just because it's outside of that very intimate Gokula region, like the world where Krishna is personally engaged in his pastimes with the Brij Basis. It is also this that constitutes the transcendental bliss of the delicious loving service manifested by Sri Gaura Sundar. This also eternally exists only in the self-same Sweta Dweep. Therefore, Bhaje Sweta Dweepam. Therefore, we worship and surrender to Sweta Dweep. Very amazing. Now, this brings us to the last section, from 57 through to the end of the book, which is verse 62. Let us just briefly look at 57, and then tomorrow we will, because 57 is basically just introducing the last five verses. So in 57, it is stated that on hearing these hymns containing the essence of the truth, the Supreme Lord Krishna said to Brahma, Brahma, if you experience the inclination to create offspring by being endowed with the real knowledge of the glory of Godhead, then listen, my beloved, from me to this science set forth in the following five shlokas. So Krishna, in the last five verses of the book, he is going to explain how Brahma can actually become perfect. Yeah. So, there's interesting purport. The Supreme Lord became sort of like merciful, really. Benevolent. It means like benevolent, wanting to give. When Brahma, with great eagerness, chanted the names Krishna and Govinda, expressive of the form, attribute, and pastimes, Brahma was actuated by the desire for mundane creation. So one way or another, it does appear that Brahma actually had this mundane desire to create. Krishna then said to Brahma, or Krishna then explained to Brahma, how pure unalloyed devotion can be practiced by people who are engaged in worldly occupations. By combining their worldly occupations with the desire for carrying out the instructions of the Lord. And then a little summary he makes in the last paragraph. What is about to be described is how bhakti can be practiced by performing worldly duties in the form of carrying out the commands of the Supreme Lord. This is basically what Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. The principle is exactly the same, as we'll see when we read through these last five verses. Do your duty while fixing your mind on Krishna and cultivating, hearing and chanting about Krishna. In that way, trying to cultivate and increase your attachment to him. So that is the principle there, and that we'll discuss tomorrow, along with giving you some idea of the questions for the test. Any comments or questions? In Dharma, if you follow Dharma, then you pick up the power which is there within the Dharma. If you perform sin, then there's natural potency in that sin to drag you down. If you study the Vedas and follow the Vedas, there's a natural potency within the Vedas. And when you study them and become absorbed in them, that potency will act on you. Then in penance, there's power in penance. You could just be an ordinary person, but if you take up some penance, then through the penance, you were just existing as an ordinary person. But when you did the penance, then from the penance you become empowered. And in that way, you can go either up or down. Yeah. It's not that you just do it and that's all there is to it. There is inherent potency in the activity. So if you you steal something, you may think it just ends with that. You know, I just stole a thing and that's it. Now it's all over. But the fact is that because you stole it, there was some power in that to drag you down. That's your karma. That's the karma, the potency of karma. So that potency will drag you down. Even though later you may say, well, hang on a second, I'd rather not go down. But you will go down because there was that potency to degrade within the activity of stealing. Just like people who chant Hare Krishna or take prasadam, for example, they don't know what it is. They got no idea. But there's potency in that. Before they know it, they're going to find themselves inclined towards devotional service because there was potency within that. Yeah. Just like it's described that Jiva Goswami describes in Bhakti Sandarbha that in one temple in South India there was one mouse. And when the devotees closed the curtains, in those days they had no electricity, so they used these big complex ghee lamp things like what we're using for Dhamma Dharastika. So when the devotees would close the curtains, he would quietly climb into the ghee lamps, or just kind of hanging over the edge, he'd drink the ghee. But one day the ghee was a bit far down and he fell in and he couldn't get out and he drowned in the ghee. So what happened to him? He went back to Godhead. Jiva Goswami talks about one cat who was chased around a temple of Vishnu three times by a dog and then caught and killed, and he went back to Godhead. And actually Jiva Goswami gives the example of Prahlad Maharaj from his previous life, that he was a debauchee, but one night he and his prostitute girlfriend stayed up the whole night in some disused, like, ruined temple, fighting the whole night. So it happened to be Nrisimha Chaturdasi. It happened to be a disused temple of Lord Nrisimhadev. So because they stayed up all night and fasted all night, he became Prahlad Maharaj in his next lifetime, according to Jiva Goswami. So these things have potency. And even though we may not know about it, even though we may not like it, but these things have potency to either take us up or take us down. So that potency is not coming from us. That potency is coming ultimately from Krishna. That's the point, really. Yes, Manaji. The difference between Sweta Dweep and Vaikuntha is that Sweta Dweep is the outer part of Goloka. Yeah. Goloka is like a planet. Yeah. And then beyond it, there are the numerous Vaikuntha planets, which are also like planets. Of course, it may not be exactly in that linear sense as we look in the sky, we see the moon. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that Gokula is unlimited and all-pervading. It's all-pervading. So it's not necessarily that Gokula exactly is like a little round, a big round planet. Not exactly. But it is a fact that Swetadweep is the outer realm of Gokula, and then beneath Gokula and separate are the different Vaikuntha planets of the Narayan forms. Any other comment? Yeah. Well, Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandarbha indicates they went back to Godhead. They went to Vaikuntha, somewhere like that. Something like that. Yeah. It was, but the third time, Shishupal, he became qualified to attain the Brahma Jyoti. Well, he was cursed, you see. He had to take the three curses. I mean, the curse of the three births. It's more, it's more talking about the principle. Shishupal is a very special case. He was cursed. He is Jai of Jai and Vijay. So he underwent, special sequence of events because of the curse of the four Kumars. Then finally, actually, after Shishupal, he didn't go to the Brahma Jyoti, really, but he became Jagai, of Jagai and Madai. But the basic principle is, he's like the classic example of someone who hated Krishna, but he's not the only one. There have been other people who hated Krishna and never forgot him for a moment. Now, in the case of them, they went into the Brahma Jyoti. And Shishupal is basically illustrating that point, that he became qualified to enter the Brahma Jyoti at the end of that third birth. Yeah. All the principle is that people who hate Krishna and they just go through their life constantly hating him, they become spiritualized through that constant remembrance, but because they have no devotion, they cannot go to a place where there is devotional service. So they go to a spiritual place where there's no devotional service. And the only such place is the Brahma Jyoti. So Shishupal, he's like the classic example, although it's not exactly that's what happened to him. But generally with people who are like that, it is. Then at a certain point in the battle, he appealed to his, I think, brother, or uncle or something, whose name was Mahi Ravana, who lived in the subterranean heavenly planets. So he went down to ask him for help. And Mahi Ravana said, yeah, sure, I can help you. I think actually Mahiravana said, you know, you may be wasting your time fighting this Ram. Yeah, he did. He told him, you know, you may be wasting your time, so why don't you stop?